TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I want to help you unleash the artistic beast inside you today.
It was a dark, stormy night. I'd been up for hours, and they called me in for a murder. The last thing on my mind. I drowned my sorrows in some bourbon and headed on down the street. Ugh, the rich people, always getting themselves into trouble. What to do? Luckily, Matthew Moon is on the case.
Matthew Moon will find out who Lucille Ball killed, right?
Exactly.
That was good.
Sing us next time.
We'll start our old time radio hour podcast sometime soon, right?
There you go.
All right. So, yes, everyone, we are going to continue through season 3 of Strange New Worlds today with episode 4, A Space Adventure Hour. And here's a quick rundown of the story. While studying the neutron star at the center of the Catullian Belt, Captain Pike and Number One decide that it's the perfect chance to test a new Starfleet innovation that should make extended missions easier, the holodeck. What better time to push the ship's power resources to the limit than when circling the gravitationally collapsed core of a massive supergiant? What could possibly go wrong? Well, for one thing, a burgeoning television show could be canceled. Also, La'an could get trapped in a simulation with the safeties off. And in the worst case, the entire crew could be lost as the crushing gravity of the collapsing star pulls the ship apart. But don't worry, Amelia Moon is on the case. But first, some diction lessons. So, Matthew, here we are. Just what we were waiting for, since before the season aired and we saw photos of a holodeck episode. We've got the familiar yellow grid lines on the wall, and we're jumping into a story that seems pretty familiar if you've been watching Star Trek over the last 30 plus years.
Yeah, I mean, I think right up front, one of the interesting parts about this is that, you know, the story that we get inside the recreation room is nothing new. I mean, we've all seen a mystery happen, obviously, very popular with Picard and the Next Generation with the Dixon Hill mysteries. And so the idea of a character doing a mystery, you know, none of that part of the episode is necessarily unique or new or, you know, but the whole idea of the fact that we are going to use the Enterprise to test this type of room, which, of course, we saw exist in the animated series, is interesting. Now, I don't really feel like talking about, you know, canon and all that jazz. I don't really care. I think this episode, what it really does in the way it presents it is that, you know, the Enterprise is going to see if this technology is something that could actually work on the current state of starships as they are designed right now, and the power levels that they can sustain. And to me, that's actually a brilliant idea in the sense of talking about whether or not you can make a technology work, especially with the energy drain that this type of technology uses, the idea that you could do it on something like a star base where you have much more ample amounts of energy, but that on a starship, again, as they're designed now, you know, these ships, as Number One even says, you know, we go into space for 5 years and then we go back. And in many ways, too, we see in the original series and even here in Strange New Worlds, the Enterprise is frequently back to star bases and stuff to get fixed up after it's, you know, taken a beating or any of those kind of things. And so they're not often that far from some sort of help. But the idea of, like, you know, what we'd see, of course, in The Next Generation, where you'd be out on basically an indefinite mission. You could be out for 20, 30 years, really, and not necessarily have to go back for any reasons other than, you know, major damage or something like that. And that's what this technology would be for, you know, to help alleviate. I mean, one of the smart things, and they talk about it a little bit in the episode, you know, this whole idea of, if you're exploring space like that, it actually deals with the reality of how large space is and even at warp, how long it takes to get places, and that there would actually be quite a bit of boredom because there's not actually a ton to do when you're getting to the next, you know, inhabited system. Even if it takes a week, 2 weeks or whatever, the actual running of the ship, there's just not tons to do. And so the idea of needing some sort of recreation to keep your mind sharp and all that kind of stuff is really interesting. So on that note, I think that the episode actually is incredibly well thought out when it comes to the introduction of this technology. And then it's also actually well thought out in the end of where we, you know, leave the episode, and that the technology would not be something that we would see in the Next Generation time period, because these types of starships just weren't made to be able to be channeling that much power that's needed to run this system. And so all of that I thought was really well done. And I didn't expect myself to say that when we saw the pictures for the episode. Right. So how did you feel about it, Chris? Right.
Well, similar. So when we saw the pictures, my first reaction was, of course, okay, I'm not sure this is going to make sense, because for one thing, the yellow grid is what we're so familiar with from The Next Generation. And so I kind of feel like creatively, it would have been nice if they had not used that yellow grid.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, Chris. I think that's a really great point, because it would have made it much more interesting to make it feel even more primitive than, you know, that.
Right. Yeah. Because it looks just like the Next Generation holodeck,
no
the way they do it. And there's one other thing that really stood out to me, is at one point, Spock calls for the Arch. He says, computer, Arch, which is exactly the language used in the Next Generation, which, if they're just testing this out, I mean, it's possible, but it just seemed like they're using familiar language in a moment when they probably shouldn't.
Yeah, it would have been much. I agree on that point too, because I just feel like even just saying, you know, computer exit would make more sense, right? You know, even for Spock, who's probably already read the manual on this thing,
it just three times.
It just makes more sense though for him just to say something like exit.
Yeah, just something like that. But anyway, apart from that, I think that the way they approached it was really good. I rewatched The Practical Joker before watching this, which is the animated series episode that has the recreation room in it, because I hadn't seen that in a long time and I wanted to remember how they presented the holodeck or the concept of the holodeck in the animated series. And, you know, it appears there, and then Gene Roddenberry, he wanted to actually have the holodeck on the Enterprise in the third season of the original series, but probably they couldn't do it because it would cost a lot of money. And the third series is especially famous for not having any budget, so that wasn't going to happen. So we didn't see it until we get to the Next Generation. But he had the idea going all the way back to the original series, and of course it was in the animated series, which that episode would have been made after TOS had been canceled.
Well, even Gene Roddenberry was kind of cagey about whether or not he considered the animated series, I feel like, canon in that sense. And I think that's why in Next Generation it's presented, obviously, is being this basically brand new
something
technology
new
that's really come into its own in a way that they'd never seen it before.
Right. So in this episode, when they first start talking about it, Pike talks about the recreation room. Right. And I thought, oh, good. They at least picked that up from The Practical Joker. It's the recreation room. Here it's the recreation room. But then number one immediately says, or the holodeck, you know, it's easier. So they jump immediately to that. And on a first viewing, I thought, okay, that was a little bit quick to go straight to the word holodeck. But like you were describing, the idea of this technology makes absolute perfect sense. And it wouldn't surprise me if once we get to the point of, not to the point of having starships like the Enterprise or anything, but just like traveling around our own solar system in the future, you know, if it's 100 years from now, it wouldn't surprise me if we have something like this. It may not be a whole big room, but already, you know, I have a Quest 3 virtual reality headset, and I had a Quest 2 before that, and I had a Quest Go before that. So I've been using these things now for probably about 5 years, and I will say that the Quest 3, the level of immersion that you get is already getting quite good, and that's with a pretty primitive virtual reality. Right. You know, I have Myst, for example, you know, the old computer game Myst, where you're actually on the island walking around and interacting with everything, mm-hmm. and you feel like you're there. And there's nothing scientifically to prevent us from turning energy or light into matter technologically. We can't really do it yet. I think I saw something the other day about scientists actually did create some matter from light. But, you know, in terms of scientific theory, it's possible. Right. And this seems like one of the technologies on Star Trek that is most attainable for us to be able to create a room like this mm-hmm. where we can actually create objects that feel real and we can touch and interact with. So I think it's an obvious thing that you would have a space explorers. And so I think it makes sense that it's something that they would want to put on starships. Within Star Trek, it's interesting that we're seeing it now when we never saw it in this form until the Next Generation. Now on Discovery and the episode Lethe, they have a it's not a whole holodeck, but it's like a holographic type room that's only used for combat training. And La'an has a line in this episode that I think is a reference to Discovery, where she tells Scotty, if you base a holodeck off of a battle simulator, it's going to act like a battle simulator. And I think that was a reference to the fact that prior to this on starships, they were using some similar technology to simulate combat like that. But then the final thing I'll just say about it is that in the end, I think what the writers did at the end of the story of saying, hey, we tried this out. It doesn't really make sense right now because if something goes wrong like it did here, you know, the whole ship could be destroyed. It needs a dedicated power supply. So let's just put it aside until the day when we can actually make that happen. And so they give us an in-universe explanation as to right. why we don't see it. Although the last little point I'll make is that I don't recall on The Next Generation there ever being a reference to a dedicated power system just for the holodeck. I think that came about in maybe a Parallax, maybe like early in Voyager, there's an explanation about the separate power systems.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that it's Voyager that gives us that. And then, of course, it's seen in Picard, right? We see that idea of as the ship is slowly dying, this whole idea of the fact that the holodeck can still run, which we all sort of made fun mm-hmm. of even at that point, because it seems kind of silly. But yes, I think this is where I feel like in many ways the show working better if it's not a part of canon. It's like they can draw all these things and by making it their own, mm-hmm. I think it makes more sense. And in this instance too, with the recreation room, this is one of those places where I think they did a great job of making it their own. And it really actually works, mm-hmm. right? And their thought mm-hmm. process behind the whole thing was, I thought, smart in that sense. They put it to the test when the ship is going to be under stress in the first place. And so they're really seeing if this technology can work at the worst moments that a ship can go through. And mm-hmm. and so in all that, I think that's really well done.
Yeah.
Then all the places where they kind of pull from all these different places of what we know in the Prime universe, I think also work as well to explain where they especially end up in at the end of the episode. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is actually we've kind of been a little bit frustrated this season so far with some of the writing. And on this side of the episode, I think the writing feels really good, actually. And it seems like it's really smart and they had really thought through the implications of what they were doing. And those implications really actually work.
Yeah. Well, they clearly realized that, okay, we want to do something with the holodeck, but we can't just throw a holodeck on the ship. We have to really think about how we're going to present this and then how we're going to get ourselves out of it at the end, which they did. I will say that if I were a crew member and Starfleet said, hey, we want you guys to like fly into a neutron star and then we're going to test some technology that might knock out all your power systems, I might be a little uncomfortable with that.
it's what they do, but they boldly go, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this episode, because of the use of the holodeck, I already mentioned Computer Arch earlier, but it is filled with some very familiar themes and tropes and storylines. And here, it's time for Dixon Hill to get out of the way, because Amelia Moon is in the house and she's looking sharp. She looks like globe-trotting explorer Carmen Sandiego. I was asking myself, where in the ship is La'an Sandiego?
That makes sense, you know? So, she really does look like Carmen Sandiego.
Well, her outfit apparently was based on Carmen Sandiego, from what I've heard. So the premise, it feels a bit like a retread. It's basically, here's Dixon Hill again. You know, we had Bashir with the James Bond stuff in DS9. It's a very familiar thing that they do. But I think it was a smart move to put Christina Chong front and center in this episode and have her be the character that really drives it. Not only because of kind of her personality and her role on the ship, and she would be the one to be trying to solve the mystery, but also I think Christina Chong herself as an actress and the way she presents that character really it provided a stable element through a story that was quite silly, filled with meta references and familiar tropes and some over the top characters.
Yeah.
I will mentioned, I thought like the whole cast from an acting point of view was fantastic in playing their characters, playing characters that are different than their normal characters. But for Christina Chong, how did you feel about her as the lead of this whole story?
I think that one of the best parts of the episode is utilizing this character of La'an, who, because of the experience she had at the beginning of the season, and of course at the end of last season, coming face to face with her demon, and in some ways being able to beat that demon, right, in the Gorn, and giving her this new sense of and really a new lease on life, right? I hate to just use the cliche, but that's really what this character's had. She's had a bit of a renaissance, right? And she is open to new experiences, and so the fact that she would gravitate towards this character makes sense because of who she is as a character. You know, I think this is one of those places where, we have been very critical, I think, this season of many places where the writing is actually not doing the characters of this series, especially the ones created specifically for Strange New Worlds, any favors. And this is a place where they absolutely do La'an a favor by allowing us to dig into her character, who she is, all the things that they've been telling us about this character for the last two seasons and now into season three. We're really letting this character blossom and, not that blossom. Whoa. but she gives a fantastic performance. I I've become more and more a fan of hers on this series because I find her to be one of the most versatile actresses on the series in the sense that she is able to do hard edge, you know, very like gung-ho. You know, she is G.I. Jane, basically. But in the next episode, she can easily, especially in this season, be a character who is also learning to soften, learning to grow, learning to expand her sense of being and her enjoyment of things and people and relationships. And there's just, I think she puts on a great performance here. It is very fun to see her kind of dig into this. But also just we're able to see that this character is whip smart and is not really fooled by anything that the computer is throwing at her. Even though she has to adjust her own tactics, right? She's able to, you know, figure everything out in the end. So on that side of this, great choices, great writing in that sense of what we're doing for the character of Lon. I could not be happier. Really enjoyed her performance. And in all honesty, I think Lon is actually becoming one of my favorite characters in the show. And I think part of that is because she's a character who is truly growing and changing throughout these seasons in a way that's really enjoyable. In fact, what I would connect her with and kind of use as an example would be Kira, where Kira starts off as very no-nonsense, hard-edged, doesn't like to have fun, wouldn't even ever think...
Had a lot of trauma in her life up to that point.
100%. Yeah. Wouldn't think about a relationship, really. In fact, we even just heard, you know, on a couple episodes ago, talk about how she's just not the commitment type. And yet, we're slowly watching that character come out of her shell. And I think Kira is really almost the prototype for what they're kind of doing with Laon, like you mentioned, with the trauma and everything. So, yeah, I've gone on for a while, but really that's because I felt like this is the stuff that I've been wanting to see from this series, especially in season three. Now that we've been with these characters for two seasons, I want this kind of material where characters can shine and we can watch them grow, especially those that have been created specifically and have only ever been seen in and probably will only ever be seen in Strange New Worlds.
Well, speaking of that, so Laon is a character who was created for this show. So there are no TOS interactions with her to judge anything that the writers do with her against. And so,
I mean, can you imagine that conversation with Khan? Oh, you met my daughter who you had a flirtation with, and you also had a flirtation with, but neither of you can seem to remember.
Maybe I'll ask Chekhov what he thinks about it, what he remembers. Oh, wait, he's not here. So, yeah, when I was watching, I was thinking, like, I wonder why Spock never mentioned to Kirk that he dated Khan's great-great-great-granddaughter.
Yeah.
But,
it's a little awkward.
No, but in all seriousness, you know, so this is a case where we haven't been a big fan of the Christine Chapel-Spock relationship because we already know how they interact with each other in the future. And so that's kind of tricky, you know, how you do that. But here, you know, this is totally wide open. And I also think that pairing them together, and I saw this coming from the opening of Wedding Bell Blues when they're having the dance
100%.
For her to teach Spock how to dance at the wedding. Yep. It was quite obvious at that point that there was something going on. There's some spark happening there. So this just confirms that. And I think, though, pairing them together makes a lot of sense because they're both more similar to one another as people and kind of how they think about things and view things. And they're both strong characters, mentally strong people, I think. And they just seem to have a lot more in common. I'm not going to say I think that this is going to turn into a relationship that's going to run through the series or anything. It's probably not. But if I were looking around the ship and saying, okay, well, who's a good match for Spock? I think Laon. And who's a good match for Laon? I think it would be Spock. as opposed to Chapel or anybody else?
I mean, I love the idea of this relationship. And I think what you said, the beauty is that both of these characters in their own way are very logical and they are very driven and they kind of view life very similarly. And yet they have some differences, right? That make that an interesting thing. There's enough opposite there to attract, but there's also enough similarity there to actually help them come together as a couple. And I think the beauty of that is this: La'an and Spock were friends who realized that they could lean on each other and could trust one another and found each other's company to be mutually beneficial. They were willing to be sacrificial with one another. I mean, the fact that La'an is willing to take out time to teach Spock how to dance and help him as a friend. I mean, those are all the type of things that are so important to, you know this, I know this. If you want to make a relationship last, you need enough similarities, but you also need enough differences, and you need that willingness to be there for one another self-sacrificially and caringly. And I think both of them actually have this. And if anybody is able to, I think, really appreciate Spock's logical side and thought process, it is La'an, and she's not going to be somebody who's going to get upset about that, because that's more often than not the default for her, right? Which is the logical frame of mind. Mm-hmm. So I think it's great. I think the chemistry between these two pops off the screen, and it really is, I think, the perfect choice. Like, in some ways, I think it would have been much more interesting for them to not try to force this thing between Christine and Spock, where Christine kind of has a thought process, you know, of like, I think I kind of like this guy, but it just seems pretty unavailable, right? And really, in the end, having always been building to this moment, I just think it would have been better.
Yeah.
But in all, I think this is really just the right choice. I think it really works for the two characters. Again, this seems to be kind of more character writing in what you find where you just have two actors who really connect. And so then you put them together. That seems to also have been what has happened here almost. And I'm a huge fan of it. I couldn't be happier that this is, you know, where we're going. And I would love to see this actually be something that blossoms and lasts and feels much more adult and much more interesting than the stuff that we got with Spock and Christine, which felt, you know, like a bad teen romance.
Well, anything we get is going to feel more adult than what we were getting between Spock and Chapel. Just by nature of the character of La'an, it's going to be more adult.
True.
Yeah. I'm not sure how they could have built, just based on how La'an's overall storyline has been, I'm not sure how they could have built towards this instead, because I think that the what happened with Hegemony, the resolution of that, I think was necessary for La'an to even open up to this possibility in the first place. You know, the way her character was written prior to this, it doesn't seem like she would have even pursued anything like this.
Right. No, so, no. I think what I'm saying is that it would have been more interesting for, I think, them to have negated the Christine and Spock stuff and allowed there to be a very nice professional relationship between La'an and Spock that slowly blossomed into something completely different and didn't come to fruition until this season, because she's gone through that metamorphosis with what happened in Hegemony parts 1 and 2.
So you're saying like a long professional relationship that blossoms gradually.
Right.
So just like Worf and Troy, right?
You know, you say that, and what's hilarious is my wife and I have been rewatching Star Trek: The Next Generation, and that actually doesn't just come out of nowhere, because they actually do a lot of stuff together throughout the series, especially once Alexander comes onto the ship.
That's true.
The problem is that they shove it into the last season, and by that point, you're just ending.
Yeah.
And that was not the relationship that that people really wanted to see any kind of resolution to. They didn't care about the, what we wanted was Troy and Riker. It was just, that was the choice, I think, that made it strange. Rewatching the series, it actually kind of makes sense that, you would have them find themselves in a relationship together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just doesn't make sense for all that they did with Troy and Riker too at the same time. So,
yeah. Well, a last note on this relationship thing, just Christina Chong's versatility. When she walks in the room, both at the beginning and at the end of the episode, where Spock is dancing, just the way her face softens and lights up, there's like this, because she's normally this very kind of on guard, alert, serious character most of the time. But it's like a switch, just like suddenly so much softer. And that just stood out to me both times when she comes into the room.
Yeah. I mean, again, one of the hallmarks, I think, of honestly this episode is the character work that she's doing. And I think a lot of the nuance that she's given this character that we are only really seeing come to light this season. And it's really good.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit to something that might not be quite as rosy of a conversation. We'll see. The cold open, where it's like an episode of the original series. It's The Last Frontier. We're on the bridge and Paul Wesley is doing his own William Shatner. He's known for his diction. So you asked me on the other side of the barn before we started recording if this cold open was even necessary for the episode. So I have some thoughts on it, but tell me yours first.
I will try to be nice. This cold open is a waste of time for the episode one, because it's not needed. It's not important for the rest of the episode. Even if they kept the rest of the episode the same, you don't need this. This is legitimately, this and the way they do the credits are a gimmick. It's legitimately a gimmick that is all about, this is where nostalgia is done wrong. It's that thing where people can just point to and say, oh, remember that thing? This is just like that thing. Why do we, this, if you're going to do nostalgia and you're going to do this type of episode, you want to do it in a way where it's pivotal to the story. The problem is specifically this cold open and then the end of the episode as well, literally has no purpose other than just for Star Trek fans to be like, oh, they're doing the original series, but worse. And why you would want to do that. And also, the way it's coming off feels like you're doing a Saturday Night Live skit making fun of the original series.
Right.
Rather than actually being respectful towards the original series and the fact that, hey, without this thing, none of this exists. And so I was actually pretty offended. And I don't say that word at all very often. I mean, I think you could probably count on one hand the amount of times that I've actually kind of been offended by something. But this was offensive in the sense that it just
I told you I was sorry about that, Matthew.
Yeah, it just felt like it was making fun of a thing that without that thing, what they're doing doesn't exist. And so why not do it in a much more loving and
well, that's the thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. And a much, look, this might also sound harsh, but this feels like somebody's attempt to do a love letter to Star Trek. And the last time somebody did that, it was also an abysmal mess that everybody hated because it was terrible and actually was everything but a love letter. It was the ultimate height of disrespect to the show that was on and really to the show that it was aping, The Next Generation. I mean, so that's when I talked about this, I think maybe two episodes ago, where writers feel as though they're being clever. this is not too clever by half. This is just bad. And I don't understand why they did it, because it would have been much more interesting to do something character-driven for the episode. Maybe give us more Spock and La'an action, you know, which is driving this whole episode in the first place. That would have been much more interesting than wasting. I mean, they waste like 3 minutes of your time on something that literally has nothing to do with the episode. And so I tried to be very kind in the way that I said this, but also I was really frustrated, and I felt turned off to the episode immediately watching it. I mean, the moment started, I was just like, okay, I feel done.
Right. Well, that's a really good point, because so my experience with this episode is I've watched it twice, and the first time I watched it, that was my reaction. I was really put off at the very beginning of the episode because of the cold open, and it really colored the rest of the episode for me as I watched it. The first time I watched this episode, I really did not like the episode overall. I just didn't like the episode, and I thought, okay, well, it's going to be interesting to discuss this. Then I went back and watched it again. I watched it yesterday, so I let like 3 or 4 days go by, and I had a bunch of activities over the weekend and such. And the second time I watched it, I felt quite different about it, and I came away thinking, okay, this is actually quite a good episode. You know, there's some things in here that are not great, but overall, it's even though a lot of it's familiar with the holodeck and all this stuff, it's still a good episode. The acting's good. In the murder mystery, and the characters they've created are fun, and it's pretty good. But the cold open the first time definitely put me off. Now, I disagree that it has nothing to do with the episode and that it's not needed. I think the cold open is necessary for the episode, for the story, because you need to establish that they're making this TV show. Because that's what all the characters involved in the murder mystery are involved in this TV show. Everything from Maxwell Saint acting as the captain, all the way to Sonny Lupino, who's supposed to be like Lucille Ball. And then you've got TK Bellows, who's supposed to be Gene Roddenberry. Like, you need to establish that there's this TV show that they're making, and sort of the time in television when it's being made, which is where the kind of campy cheesiness of it comes off. So I think it's necessary to have the cold open. But I think if you're going to do it, you should do it not as a parody of the way that people who think Star Trek is silly view Star Trek, which is basically what they did. You know, they're going to steal our brain cells. We need it for all kinds of space reasons. And, you know, the way that the language was written, for some people, I'm sure it's very funny, but it is, I've seen online it referred to, this episode referred to as a love letter, especially the cold open and the closing, as a love letter to the original series. But I really don't know that I would define this as a love letter, because it actually feels more like making fun of Star Trek rather than celebrating what it was in the time period that was there. And I think that the decision to do that undermines part of the message of the story later, which is, I mean, it's very like heavy-handed, but there's this whole statement about how Star Trek for generations has influenced people and helped them become better people and find their way in the world. Mm-hmm. And none of that would be possible without a second season of this show that we see in the cold open. And I think if that's going to be your message, I think you should present that cold open more in line with what Star Trek really was and why it attracted people and how intelligent the writing was, especially at the time, and celebrate that instead of making fun of some of the dialogue that was written decades before we had scientific knowledge about some of those topics, or making fun of William Shatner's speech patterns, which, yes, they're unique to him, but you know, people today, they love to make fun of William Shatner's acting on the original series, but mm-hmm. what they don't understand is that the way William Shatner acts on the original series was not an uncommon style of acting at the time. It looks odd today, but it wasn't like he was some kind of crazy actor. You know, mm-hmm. he was a well-respected actor at the time, and he was very good on camera.
I mean, understudy the plumber, Christopher Plummer.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
In Hamlet.
Yeah, Christopher Plummer. So, yeah, so, you know, so I think the presentation was very, very off the mark mm-hmm. At the beginning. But I do think the cold open is necessary. I liked the set design, the color grading and the color palette and all, especially, I thought looked really nice. But I think the writing of that was way off the mark.
Yeah, I would argue that it's not needed specifically because you get from everything else in the episode why you're here, what's happening. And when you need to see what the show looks like, they show it to you later on.
That's true.
And they so do again, have footage like, later I, on. Yeah. This mm-hmm. is truly somebody thinking, isn't this just going to be the bee's knees that we're oh, going 100%. To put the quote unquote original series and it's open mm-hmm. on Strange New Worlds. It's going to be, they're going to love, again, it's a gimmick.
Yeah.
And if you would, for the love of all that is freaking holy, stop with your ridiculous gimmicks to trying to get us to watch your show and just actually write what's great on this show, which is the relationships of the characters, which we have praised so much already in this episode. Also, we praised the writing when it came to its handling of the recreation room. Both mm-hmm. great points. It is mm-hmm. at this moment where they think they're being very clever where it really falls apart. And the moment that they get meta about Trek, it's awful. It's terrible. And don't get me started on that stupid speech that quote unquote Uhura makes about how great Star Trek is, because it is the worst. Let's pat ourselves on the back for how great we've been and how much everybody should love us. And nobody appreciates us. And if they did, they would know how great we are. Give me a freaking break, people. This is terrible writing, because what you're doing is the very thing you're not supposed to do in any writing, is to just tell people what they're supposed to think. You're telling me how I'm supposed to think about Star Trek. You're not mm-hmm. just showing me how I should feel about Star Trek. Let me feel the love by writing great characters that I care about, which is why people fell in love with the original series in the first place. It was Kirk. Mm-hmm. It was Spock. It was McCoy. It was Chekhov. It was Sulu. It was Uhura. It was Scotty. All of these people, it was Bones. All of these people are the ones that we all fall in love with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because the characters were written in a way that endears them to our hearts. Nobody sat mm-hmm. there and told you, on the show, you should appreciate us because we're, you know, helping you see yourselves for the way that you should see yourself.
Yeah. Well, I think in this case, the view that this is a love letter to Star Trek is that bit that's delivered by Uhura / Joni Gloss in the episode is, I mean, it is a commentary on Star Trek itself, which in this particular episode, like, I can take that out of context. If that happened on a regular story, like if Pike, if they were sitting around the table in the ready room and they were discussing a situation or maybe how they're going to help people on another planet, and he talks about what they're doing in that way mm-hmm. that's basically telling you that in a meta way that Star Trek's great, that would bother me a bit more. Here, I thought it was heavy-handed, but I can see it being in here just because the episode itself, because the storyline is revolving around the cancellation of the show, it made a bit of sense that they would mention that. But I can also understand your view.
But you know what a love letter to Star Trek is? A love letter to Star Trek is Star Trek Season 3 of Picard, by somebody who knows Star Trek, loves Star Trek, and cares about Star Trek, and the characters. That is a love letter. Yeah. And at no point does anybody have to, in that series, tell me how much they love it and why they love it and why I should love it.
Sure. Well, Matthew, this is a love letter that is being passed through the classroom in seventh grade to the girl three desks over.
That's exactly what it is. It is the worst junior high love letter I've ever read in this sense. And again, this is where the episode is completely bipolar, because half of this episode is so great with what it's doing with the reason we're here. The character work, it's fantastic. But again, it's the moment that these writers feel that they're being clever that the episode falls apart on that side. And if you had had a cohesive episode where we just go in and solve a mystery that does involve, like we see, again, it's about the computer, because it's connected to La'an, giving her the very thing that she doesn't realize she needs to work out, but this allows her to work it out. That's genius writing. We don't need, like, actually, literally the rest of this is, I'm not going to curse on this episode, but it is BS. That is legit BS. Because the rest of the episode is exactly what, like, draws me to this show. It's the characters. And the actors' portrayals, who I actually love. Like, I love all of these actors who are in this show. That's the thing that keeps me watching this show, because I think they're all phenomenally cast. And so much of the time, it's really the writing that lets them down.
So listening to you talk about that, I'm picturing the episode without the cold open and without the closing credit silliness. And actually, it would be a better episode without the cold open, because she gets into the holodeck, she's in the mystery, she's presented with all these characters, and in the course of that, she uncovers what they are involved in, and then we see the footage that we already see in the inside the holodeck of the TV show, and that would work fine, and actually, it would be a better episode. So,
well, and what you could be doing in the episode, instead of trying to do a love letter to Star Trek, which you're not doing, do a love letter to old Hollywood, right? Do a love letter to old Hollywood, where all that intrigue about, I mean, goodness, there is a whole show on Paramount Plus about the making of The Godfather, which is just as interesting as The Godfather, because the actual mob is involved in the making of The Godfather. Like, it is a great series, right?
Yeah.
Do something like that, where you're thrust back into that time period to which we all kind of love, right? And we love the behind the scenes inner workings of all those actors, and, you know, that would be so much more fun, and again would allow the true nature of this story to shine, which is it's Spock and La'an, and they're coming together. This is their meet cute.
Well, then we find out in another documentary that the Klingons were actually involved in the making of the original series.
Exactly.
Ezzy Ardaz was actually a Klingon. So
it's always better if you read it in the original Klingon.
Exactly. Let me ask you about, well, talking about old Hollywood, I'm just picturing the hill, and there's a Bellowswood sign on the hillside instead of a Hollywood sign, because I wanted to ask you about T.K. Bellows in here, who's supposed to be Gene Roddenberry, because I told you about this on a text message after watching it, but the first time that I watched this episode, the first moment that we see T.K. Bellows, I said, is that Brandon Braga? Like, is Brandon Braga having a cameo in this episode? And then, okay, so it's Gene Roddenberry, but the way they do the gray, like the hair, and then just the way that Anson Mount looks in that outfit, I felt at times, especially the first time watching it, where they were talking about, oh, the show is going to be canceled and all this, talking about Maida, I felt a little bit like they were trying to portray Brandon Braga and kind of rag on him a little bit as being the blame for the downfall of Star Trek at the end of the Golden Age with Enterprise going down. Because, you know, people, again, they like to rag on Brandon Braga, who people forget gave us some of the very best stories in all of Star Trek. But, you know, he's someone that becomes a scapegoat for things for fans, or he certainly was for a while. And I don't know if there was any thought of that at all. Probably not, but that just popped in my head when I saw him at first, and it took a little while for that image to go away for me.
I find that to be fascinating that that's where your mind went. Because I never went there. I always just thought it was Gene Roddenberry, and I also felt in some ways like this episode felt a little disrespectful to him portrayal for sure. of him. And so, look, I think we're all very, very much aware of the faults of Gene Roddenberry as a person. I don't think anybody, nobody on this network is ever going to talk about, you know, that he was some sort of perfect person that we can never have any disagreements with, or say that he did everything right. But yeah, I that is fascinating that you read that. But in some ways, you know, like you said, it has been very popular in fandom for Star Trek to get on these other people, like a Brandon Braga, to jump all over them, or to jump on somebody like a Gene Roddenberry, both products of their time. And, you know, in the case of Brandon Braga, I think it's incredibly unfair, because many of the things he gets blamed for actually come from things that he had no control over at the studio. I don't think those things were his fault. Anyway, you could litigate all of that happens on Enterprise, but so much of that is not his doing. It's stuff that's mandated by the studio. It was a little bit, this is another place where I think the episode thinks it's being clever again, and it's not very clever. And I wish that they would just kind of stop this nonsense, but we know they're not going to, because they're going to be puppets. And so
the sock puppets are coming.
Yes. We already saw it. Somebody tweeted
the Jim Henson puppets are coming. Our listener Mark also sent us an actual Gorn sock puppet, listening to us last time.
Looked better than the Gorn on the show.
It did.
Yeah.
It was a little more believable.
Exactly. And I have to ask you about this, because it seems like in a lot of ways, there's a lot of agreement between us. And so I think it might be an interesting discussion of how do you write the ship for this series? Obviously, there's nothing we could do about season 3.
Oh, I don't know.
But there's, I mean, this episode, half of this episode is exemplary. In the sense, the thing that we really enjoyed, thought were really well done. And then the other part is stuff that we're just like, what? I don't know. I don't even know if it's possible, really, especially since this season's in the can and they're already working on season 4 at this point. And I guess, you know,
which is going to include puppets.
Right. And so we're already seeing that what they think and what we heard at Comic-Con, right? Their thought process is that they need to lean in more to, let's throw every gimmick possible at this show. And I'm really worried that this show, which the first season of this show was great.
Yeah, it was.
Season 2 was wobbly, but this season so far has been less than a mixed bag, in the sense like...
Well, yeah, I think the issue is that, well, first of all, I don't actually see it as them throwing gimmicks to try to get people to watch the show. I think that they just see the show as a playground to try out different things and see what can we do with Star Trek as a framework. Can we do it with animation? Can we do a musical? Can we have puppets? You know, just what can we do? And I think they're going to continue to do that, because I think that's just how they see the show, is it's like a playground for ideas that maybe you can use Star Trek as the vehicle for, you know, or like how many different ways can you wrap Star Trek and make it still work? They're just like trying stuff. So it's not exactly what I would call gimmicks as much as it's just, let's just play around and try things. And so the show lacks cohesion. There's no cohesive vision for what this show is from a storytelling point of view. You know, this is not Picard. It's not Discovery. It's not Enterprise or Deep Space Nine. It doesn't have, or Prodigy, you know, another recent one. It doesn't have any cohesive vision of this is the story that we're telling and we're going to take viewers on this journey episode by episode and get to a destination. And the only destination that I've really heard them give is that the fifth season will end with Kirk in command, which is an extremely vague destination. And with what they're doing with the mix of episodes and styles right now, all I can imagine is like, if you imagine going down the road, your car's falling apart, you know, like a door's falling off, the mirror's dangling down the side, one of the tires is almost flat, and the car's bouncing up and down. And finally, right when the gas needle hits below empty, you coast into the gas station and that's your destination. It kind of feels like that's the ride that we're on.
I mean, I think that's an apt metaphor and really well said. You know, it when you were talking and saying that, it really just feels like what we're doing is we're skin suiting Star Trek. We don't really care about Star Trek. We're just trying to tell to whatever stories we want with the veneer of Star Trek.
I don't think it's that extreme, but I get what you're saying. Yeah.
But when you, and this is the thing, right? The original series told lots of different genre stories to tell the overall message that they were trying to get across. But it had a focus, which was the characters. It had a focus, which was each episode actually had a point and a message that it did want to get across, right? It had, of course, all of those things. And I think what's missing from especially this season so far of Strange New Worlds is a focus on what's really important about the show, because any show, regardless of what it is, right, it comes down to the characters. And you need to care about where the characters are and where they're going. And you can tell all sorts of different types of stories. You know, comedies do that, all sorts of different types of stories. Dramas do that. They tell all sorts of different types of stories. And yet, the core has to be about moving our characters from one place to the next in a way that feels natural and organic and interesting as a viewer, because you love the character. And like you mentioned, it seems like they care more about just throwing crazy things at the wall and like, can we do this instead of should we do this? You know, I feel like it really comes down to the whole Jurassic Park manifesto that Malcolm gives in the original movie. And he says, your scientists were so preoccupied with whether they could, they didn't stop to think if they should. And the writers of this show seem to be so preoccupied with if they can do a thing, they don't stop to think if they should do a thing because it's beneficial to the series. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. That's a problem.
Yeah.
And I think we're unfortunately suffering the repercussions of that. And it's something I think that you actually saw, you know, I didn't watch all of Discovery, but I know that show every season seemed to go through this weird, strange metamorphosis into something that felt completely different almost than the last season. And it didn't feel like it had a ton of cohesion. And what you need in any genre series, especially something as long-lasting as Star Trek or Star Wars or any of those things, if you're going to write that thing, you have to understand the rules of that universe inside and out in a way that allows you to bend and or break but still feel like you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I don't feel
like you need to know what you're doing.
Right. And that's where I don't feel like they're doing that here, because again, it's more about, can we do a thing instead of should we do a thing?
Yeah.
In the end, Malcolm was right.
Yeah. He was not in the middle. He was right. So
different Malcolm, but yes.
All right. Well, we'll see what we get coming up. So coming back to this episode to close out, any final thoughts specifically about A Space Adventure Hour, and what's your rating for it?
Again, I really come down to the thought, this is a bipolar episode. I love half of this episode, and I kind of hate, and I don't use that word often, but I actually kind of hate the other side of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a 2.5 out of 5 mystery glasses that has lipstick on it. Because it's so frustrating, because as I was rewatching the episode again, man, the stuff that I loved, I was just totally bought into. I was captivated by the performances of Christina Chong and Ethan Peck as these characters.
Mm-hmm.
So wonderful, right? And we didn't even talk about the story for Scotty, but what a great story for him. Like, talk about a beautiful moment of character development, where this character who has been holding on to feeling like he has to do everything himself. And we learn the reason why. And number one, helping him to see, it's okay. You're not responsible for everything that happens on a starship. We all are. That's why we're all here.
Mm-hmm.
Man,
that was
phenomenal. Everything else in this episode is just a mistake that needed to be rectified, and you could have easily done it, easily, by just not trying to go meta. The rest of the episode, I honestly, if that had happened, this probably could have been the 5-star episode of the season, because it was so good elsewhere, and everything that I had said previously that I've been looking for. And so it's just frustrating that they really fumble it in the end. I mean, it feels like, you know, those great football plays where the guy is dancing in the end zone before he gets to the end zone, and the ball gets knocked out and creates a fumble, and it goes back the other way for 100 yards.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened in this episode. It's like you were there and then you just completely botched it.
Yeah, yeah. What I find interesting, just seeing a little bit of chatter online about this episode, is that there's also the flip side of the fan base that loves that cold open and the credits and all the stuff that we're saying should be different, and doesn't really care for Spock and La'an or any of the other stuff that we're enjoying from the episode. So I find it interesting, you know, how different people can view the same creative, but I think we're pretty much in alignment, you and I. And I also wanted to say that when La'an revealed her character, I really was relieved when she said Amelia Moon, not Amelia Bedelia, because I can just imagine what this episode would have been like if Amelia Bedelia was trying to unravel this mystery, and what kind of craziness would have happened as she misunderstood everything Spock said to her, advising her.
Sister loved those books as a kid.
I used to read them to my daughter when she was growing up, so and she used to really crack up at those. So anyway, I think I've said pretty much everything I have to say about this episode. Yeah, I agree. It's really a mixed bag. There's a lot of really good stuff in here, and then there's other stuff that's just way too over the top, overflowing with meta references. And I think that the literal recreations of the 1960s TV show The Last Frontier is a little bit too much of a parody of TOS to be considered a love letter. But I'm going to give this episode 7 Amelia Moon novels.
Very nice.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on a space adventure hour. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcast. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. It's not open just to every random person on Facebook. We want it to be there for you, the listeners. So please do that. You'll find a post on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your comments with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. Of course, you can also send us email. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose Saddle Up, and that will come to us by email. And you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not seeking out new space destinations, where can people find you?
Well, you mean drowning myself in bourbon, hoping the episode gets better? I mean, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, here on the network, you can find me in the 602 Club, talking about all of those fandoms we love outside of Star Trek. You can also find me over in the Nerd Party Network with a couple of shows. One's called Owlpost, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, as well as Aggressive Negotiations, as John Mills and I talk Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, when you're not trying to figure out just what shade of lipstick that is so you can purchase it for yourself, where can people find you?
I think maybe that's what I need to ask my daughter for help with.
That's there you go. There you go.
Yeah. I'll ask her, not Amelia Bedelia. When I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing those shows with you. As you mentioned, you can also find me in many episodes in the back catalog and in social media. You can find me everywhere. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. So I'd love to chat with you there. I will say Blue Sky is where I'm most active, but you can send me a message wherever and I should see it. And if you'd like to help us keep this show and everything else we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your help, so thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next week when we'll look through the lens of time together.
Well, Chris, that seems like a lens that's a little bit dark, but hit it.